All right, welcome everyone. This is our seminar on how to develop your projects locally with VS Code, particularly with a focus on Windows and PCs. Here on campus, it's final project season, and so students are starting to transition from their work with PSETs that we have them use through this online editor we'll see called CodeSpaces and VS Code, and starting to look at options for developing locally where they have more flexibility and freedom. And so my goal here is to show you all exactly how you could begin to develop locally on Windows, hopefully give you some tools you can use and some steps that you can follow. The goal is to sort of make things sort of clear and laid out. And if you have questions, certainly feel free to message me in the chat and I'll stop and pause and take those on. Now, the editor we'll be using to develop locally is Visual Studio Code. And if you're a student here on campus, you're actually very familiar with Visual Studio Code. You've been using this editor through code.cf2.io. So whenever you log into code.cf2.io, you have been using Visual Studio Code, but you haven't been necessarily connecting to your own computer. You've been connecting to a different space called CodeSpaces, a place you can run your code. And what is CodeSpaces? And we're going to talk about a little bit about this so we can help figure out what it can develop locally. But CodeSpaces is essentially a place you can sort of harvest or use computing resources through the cloud. So GitHub and Microsoft have hosted computers that you can connect to and run using their resources. And that's sort of what this idea behind CodeSpaces really is. And if you're on campus, you might have seen something like this, where you would sort of build up your code space, start to bring in all of your packages you're using, your software, little bits of software that you use and as you run your code, basically sort of working with this remote place that you're getting this code from. Now, as soon as you log in, you see a sort of window like this. And this is a very sort of a deceiving picture, because on the one hand, what we'll see is that this UI, the way we have this terminal on the bottom, this explorer on the left, and this file in the middle, it's actually something you can use on your own computer. You can actually use something that's very similar to this. But underneath the hood, so to speak, where something is sort of happening behind the scenes, you're connecting to not your own computer, but to a different computer. And so sort of as an example of this, what you're actually doing is connecting to a computer that's running this Linux operating system, more specifically this Ubuntu 20.04 version of Linux. And we've also installed some software for you to use as soon as you connect to make things easier for you. We've installed Python 3. We've installed a package called Node.js. And we've installed things like HTTP server and Flask, which you may recall using for the homepage and finance assignments. And you're also using SQLite here to work with databases. This is all pre-installed for you on that computer you're connecting to. Now, that all seems pretty nice, right? Everything just works for you. That's pretty great. So why would we actually think about developing locally? But one of the things we can do locally that we can't do sort of in CodeSpaces is we can have much more flexibility about the programs we're using here. So we could maybe choose to install a certain version of Python. We could choose to install a certain version of HTTP server. And we also have some further flexibility that we don't rely on internet connection anymore. If you're in Widener at office hours trying to connect to our internet and that's not working for you, well, this is your solution, right? You don't have to rely on internet connection anymore. So I hope to sort of show you all why developing locally is a nice next step for your work as a programmer, and how you can sort of offboard yourself from VS Code through CodeSpaces to VS Code sort of locally. And here's the sort of visual of that. You have your VS Code editor, place for writing files, connecting to your own computer. And we have some more flexibility over what kinds of packages we want to install here. So let's go ahead and actually go ahead and begin. And we'll do that by actually just installing VS Code. So again, VS Code is a place you're going to be writing our code and editing our software. So I'll go ahead and X out of this slideshow here. And to go ahead and download Visual Studio Code, you want to go to this website called code.visualstudio.com. And I'll go ahead and put that in the chat just so you all can follow along. Let's see. So that's there in the chat. And if you're on Windows, you might see this window that says download for Windows stable build. And this is exactly where you want to be. We want to download the stable version of VS Code. So go ahead and download this. And it'll take you to some documentation for Visual Studio Code, a place you can sort of learn more. But hopefully we'll go through a little bit of the highlights here so you don't have to go read through this. But again, this is also a great resource for you as you're working here. I've downloaded this file. So I'm going to go ahead and open this. And this is my exe to install Visual Studio Code. I'll wait a bit while it opens. I'll accept the agreement saying, yes, that's fine. I'll go ahead and choose a location to install VS Code. The default one is totally fine. I'll hit next. I already have this installed, so I'm just gonna reinstall it again. So I'll hit yes. Default here is also okay. And you have some few options here. You can choose if you'd like. I want maybe a desktop icon. And I do maybe want to add some of these other features with VS Code here. these other two that are checked for you, you want to leave them checked. Add to path means you can sort of use, I think it's called code. You can sort of use that from the command line. We'll see a bit more about that later. And we also want to make sure that code or VS Code can be an editor for our supported file types like HTML, CSS, C files, and so on. So go ahead and click next here and go ahead and install. And it'll do its thing for a little bit. And eventually you will see that VS Code has been installed. And we'll go ahead and take a look at that and we'll open it up. And if everything goes well here, I should be able to minimize my window and see my new Visual Studio Code desktop icon. And I don't want to launch it just yet, so I'll hit finish here. But I can minimize this, and I do see my Visual Studio Code now installed. Before we go ahead and actually open this up, I just have this program now on my computer. I want to show you how you can sort of transition, take like a baby step from your code space you've been using on campus through code.io to Visual Studio Code sort of running on your own computer. And to do that, I'll go ahead and open up my file, web browser again, and I'll go to code.cs50.io, right? And now normally you may have chosen to just log in via GitHub, and that's totally fine, right? But we're gonna take a baby step towards using VS Code on our local computers. And we're gonna say, let's open our code space, all those files we have stored there in VS Code Desktop. So we've downloaded VS Code Desktop. Now we're gonna use VS Code Desktop to access our folders that have been stored in this code space. So I'll check that box, I'll log in via GitHub, and I'll get a prompt to open Visual Studio Code. So go ahead and do that. And now Visual Studio Code opens up for me. And as it does so, it should give me a prompt eventually. Allow an extension to open this URI. So what this is doing is Visual Studio Code is, it has an extension called GitHub Codespaces. It is basically something that connects to Codespaces, and it's asking, do you want Codespaces to open this link to your Codespace? I'll go ahead and say open that. And now Visual Studio Code sort of opens again, but this time you should see something pretty familiar, right? If you're used to working in code.io, you've seen something like this. And down below, we can see its progress in setting up the connection here. But soon we'll be able to see all my files that were in my Codespace, my same terminal, and so on. I can sort of show you that it's actually the same environment, the same place you're used to writing code by showing you that some of the same commands work. So here, for example, I have my, my terminal. I can go ahead and type ls for listing files. I can see I have my finance and homepage directories. And let's see if HTTP server works. So I could go to cd homepage, type HTTP server, and I should be able to see it running here. If I control click here, I can go ahead and see my homepage assignment, right? So very similar commands we can now run, but on our own computer, just connected to our code space. So let me go ahead and X that out and go back to Visual Studio Code here. I'll go ahead and shut down this server. I'll CD back out and I'll go to finance now. And just out of curiosity, I could also run Flask here. So I could do Flask run, wait for the server to start, click here. And my API key is not set, so it actually won't work here in just a moment. Let me go ahead and control C that, X that out, go over here, internal server error, minimize that. I'm gonna export my API key that I have to use when I run finance. I'll just give it a random value here. And let me give it some quotes. And then I can do Flask run again, and I should be able to see my finance problem set running. So what's happened here again is we've sort of connected to our code space, but we're no longer interacting with code spaces through the browser. We now are interacting through our local installation of Visual Studio Code. So any questions on this in the chat, I'm happy to take. But again, just sort of showing you that this is like a baby step you could take if you wanted to start thinking about how to use VS Code locally. I'll go back over here, shut down my server, and so on. Now, if you're comfy here, that's totally okay. You can certainly feel free to continue using your code space as part of your journey in CS50. This is a great way to actually work on your final project, right? If you're trying to make a web app that's similar to finance, you could certainly build that here. And you have this sort of location, you can store your files and just access them pretty easily. Now, if you want to get a bit more advanced, maybe you want to have your own GitHub repository, well, this might start to not work for you. In code spaces, this place you're connected to, CSCG has actually disabled git commands. So if I were to run, for example, git clone, I see that this repository is managed by CS50 and git is disabled. Well, that might not work for me if I'm trying to make my own final project and my own GitHub account that I can sort of use and connect to that repository instead. So that's some motivation for thinking beyond just connecting to code spaces through Visual Studio Code, but actually developing your own sort of local installation of files and packages you need to run your software. So that's what we'll turn to next. And certainly feel free to keep asking questions in the chat. So here, let's see. We're going to go ahead and sort of close our CodeSpace environment here. And sort of close this as well. And I actually want to go ahead and, well, I think this will be the same thing. So when you open VS Code from your desktop, let me just go ahead and do it now. It'll probably, if you open it for the first time, give you the last thing you might have opened or just like a blank slate. And here, if you have this blank slate, you can sort of tell Visual Studio Code where you want to look in your file structure to sort of see your files that you have. So here I might go to File and Open Folder. And maybe I'll want to go to my Documents, right, where I have this CS50 folder. So here's where I'm going to be actually storing my final project code. I'll go ahead and select this folder. And Visual Studio Code will sort of open this folder in a way that I can see what's going on, right? So my File Explorer, I can see I'm in the CS50 folder. Nothing's in there. But now I have this sort of interesting terminal here. And this is not the terminal we saw in code spaces, right? Some of our commands still work, like ls. Again, nothing's here, so that won't work. But we have similar commands, but this is something different called the Windows PowerShell. And you can see here, this is what Windows is calling this. This is like a way of interacting with Windows through the terminal. But here I'm interacting with my own local machine. I'm not interacting with code spaces anymore. I'm actually talking to the computer that's sitting right here. So this is an exciting development, and I could even show you. So here I'm using my username, John Harvard. I could get this username to show you this is genuinely connected to my own computer right now. And again, this is somewhat exciting, but before we get too ahead of ourselves with this terminal window, we actually want to sort of pivot and go in a different direction, because I kind of actually liked the Linux environment we were using in code spaces. I liked the commands, those are familiar to me. If you've been with us for the whole course, those are what you know. And so you don't necessarily have to relearn everything that you've done in CS50 by using the Windows PowerShell, or commands are different. We can actually install what's called the Windows Subsystem for Linux. Windows Subsystem for Linux. It's basically running Linux in your Windows computer, such that you can get access to those commands and sort of use what you already have learned from using code spaces in the course. So let me go ahead and give you all a link for how to download Windows Subsystem for Linux in the chat. It's ubuntu.com/WSL. And this should take you to a page that will sort of explain what the Windows Subsystem for Linux is. Oops, WSO. And you can download it from the Microsoft Store. So if you have a Windows computer, certainly feel free to go to the Microsoft Store and search for Ubuntu. In this case, Ubuntu 18 point something or Ubuntu 20 point something. I have, I think, version 18 or so, but you can certainly use version 20 or so, whatever you would like to use. And again, what you're doing here is you're installing a Linux system on your Windows computer, such that you can use that to develop locally. And that'll be more familiar to you because that's what you've been using with code spaces so far. And I'm seeing a question come up in the chat. Is it possible to set a space as the default window upon logging in, or is it necessary to open a workspace each time for Visual Studio Code? So remember when we were talking about opening windows here, it'll often take you to the last place you went, but I believe that if you go to something like preferences, let's see. I'm not sure how to set a default workspace off the bat, but I'm certain that is something you can do in Visual Studio Code because it is so extensible. So that's a great question. Happy to talk more about that if you need. So I won't go ahead and install the Windows subsystem for Linux here. That would take me 10, 15 minutes. But just to show you all what the power of it is, I'll go ahead and assume that you have this installed. You can come back here later on if you want to sort of rewatch what's going on here. But why don't we go ahead and open Visual Studio Code again. And once we've downloaded the Windows subsystem for Linux, we can access it in two ways, right? On our computer, we can go down here and we could type WSL. And you'll see this little Linux penguin here. So I could type WSL, run this, and now I have this new terminal window that might look somewhat familiar, right? Now I have this sort of similar dollar sign here and this sort of similar file like naming structure here. So I could type ls, I could see what's available here. A lot of things are available here. I could also use similar commands like mkdir, rm, and so on. And those would all work in this space because again, this is me running a Linux system on my local computer. But to develop your final project, you don't really want to just use this terminal window by itself. That would be a little intense and maybe not as user-friendly. So what we want to do instead is actually use the Windows subsystem for Linux with VS Code. We want to sort of connect Visual Studio Code with this Windows, this Linux subsystem that we have. So I'll go ahead and X out of that, and I'll show you that VS Code has lots of extensions you can download, but one of them you might want to think about is this Windows subsystem for Linux extension. So I go ahead and search for WSL here in my extensions tab right here. I could type remote WSL, and I could go ahead and install this extension if I didn't have it installed already. And what this will do is allow me to sort of have Visual Studio Code, a way to talk to the Linux subsystem that I have. So again, I won't sort of reinstall it, but this shouldn't take more than a few minutes if you were to go ahead and install this on your own version of VS Code. And with this installed, what you want to do to sort of connect to this Linux subsystem is go down here to this green button that says open a remote window. And open a remote window in this case means I'm going to open a remote connection or open a new connection to this Linux subsystem. So I'm going to go here and I can see some options for WSL. I go ahead and open a folder in WSL, which is what I want to do. I want to open a folder on my computer using the Windows subsystem for Linux. So go ahead and open this. And I'll go ahead and go to my documents. I'll go to CS50, and that's the folder I want. So go ahead and select folder. And now, as things load, you'll see it's establishing a connection here. I now have a very similar prompt to what I saw in CodeSpaces, but now it's connected to my own computer, right? I'm in the C folder or the C drive. I'm in my users folder for John Harvard. And further, I'm in my documents with the CS50 folder. And again, I type ls, nothing's here, but I could use some familiar commands like make directory, mkdir, a test directory here. I get this new directory called test. I can go and remove the test directory, and now it's gone. So again, this is very similar commands that you're used to, but now running on your own computer. And the nice thing about this is Git is no longer disabled. So if I wanted to use Git here, I can see I get a help guide for using Git. And if you watched our seminar on Git and GitHub, you can figure out how to make your own repositories, how to use this as part of your final project. But this sort of opens things up for you because now you can run your own commands. You can have Git installed here. So what I'm going to do is just assume I have my project inside of a GitHub repository and sort of clone it into my directory. I can use this command called git clone, basically getting this version of my project that is sort of out there and stored in GitHub onto my own local computer. So go ahead and git clone git at github.com, my own repository, carterzenke/cs50finalproject.git. And no worries if Git is unfamiliar to you. We have a seminar on how to use Git and use GitHub. I'm just showing this as an example of how you might be able to sort of get your files locally, be able to use them on your computer. So now I have this new folder called CS50 Final Project, and I can go ahead and type cd CS50 Final Project to see what's inside, similar to what I might do in CodeSpaces. I can type ls, and now here are all of my files, right? Now, at this point, I might try to go ahead and run my application here, and it's a Flask application, so I might go ahead and try to type Flask run. But if I were to do that, I would run into some dependency errors, basically saying that I haven't installed some packages, some pieces of code that my application expects. So if I go to app.py here in the finance problem set, we see that we're importing a lot of packages in Python. So this program needs the CS50 library, it needs the Flask library, it needs the Flask session library, and so on. But unlike code spaces where CS50 sort of set everything up for you there, we have no longer done that. We've left that up to you, right? You are in control of your computer. You decide what's installed and what's not installed. So for just a little bit here, I want to show you how you could install these packages and sort of give you some tools you could use to install even further packages you might decide to use on your computer. So one of the first things you might want to do as you've installed the Windows system for Linux is not necessarily go ahead and just run your code. You might want to go ahead and work with this program called apt-get or apt-get. Now, apt stands for Advanced Packaging Tool. It's a way that you can get code sort of out in the wild, out on the internet, onto your own local computer here. So apt-get will basically allow me to get things like Python, allow me to get things like SQLite and install those things on my own computer. Because again, in code spaces, we install those for you, but now you want to be able to install them on your own computer for yourself. So first things first, I want to make sure that apt-get, my package manager, is up to date. So I would run sudo apt-get, and then I would do update here. So sudo is like a prefix saying I'm an administrator, I know what I'm doing, and I want to basically make sure I can run this command with administrator privileges. I want it to sort of modify my computer. And if on Windows you've ever seen something where you've had to click continue, like Windows flashes a window and says, are you sure you want to run this program? Do you have administrator privileges? And you hit continue. This is like the same thing, but in the terminal. So you're going to do sudo apt-get update. I'll enter my password. And now it'll download the latest version of apt-get such that I can be sure that apt-get is seeing all the packages out there that I could possibly download onto my computer. And it'll take just a little bit, but now it's done. On yours, it might take a little longer because mine is pretty up to date so far, but if you download it initially, it might take just a little bit longer, and that's okay. And now that I have the latest version of apt-get, I can use it to install Python. So I might do sudo apt-get, and I want to get Python 3, the latest version of Python. So I'm going to do apt-get, sudo apt-get Python 3, but I actually want to install Python 3. So I think it's apt-get install Python 3. So I'll run that. And now it tells me, hey, Python 3 is already installed. You're good, right? But on yours, it might not be. So a good command to run anyways. And just to test this, I can go ahead and run Python 3 on my terminal. And see, I get this Python prompt here. So I could do x equals 3, x plus 1. This is all Python, right? But now I'm seeing Python is actually installed on my computer, and that's a great first step to running this Python application I've now installed on my computer and I want to work with my final project, right? Let's go ahead and quit here. And the next thing you might want to install is the Python package manager. So whereas apt-get is a package manager for the Windows substitute for Linux, pip or the Python package, Rangshin, you know what pip stands for? You can put it in the chat if you'd like.
Can you say that again?
What does pip stand for in Python?
Pip. Oh, okay. Let me type it in chat.
Sure. So pip is basically this name for the Python package manager that we can use to install all of these Python libraries, right? So to install pip, I could do sudo apt-get install Python 3-pip. Wait until that downloads. That might take a little longer on yours if it's your first time. But that'll give me the Python package manager or pip. With that then, I know I need to install Flask, right? Flask is like this core part of my program. It's what makes everything run. So I'll do something like pip 3 install Flask. And now I should see the pip package manager sort of working on its own to download the Flask library. And if no errors come up, that means it was successful. So again, installing things with pip is very simple. Usually it's just pip 3 install and the name of the package that you want to install with. In addition to Flask, I also have to install Flask session. So I'll install Flask _session. wait for that to go. And then finally, I need to install the CS50 library, which I have included in my application here from CS50 import SQL. I can do pip3 install CS50. And now with all of that downloaded, sort of getting my environment ready to go, downloading all these bits of code I can put in my computer, and now I can sort of rely on them or depend on them as part of my own code, I can go ahead and eventually, once it's done, I can run Flask run pretty safely here. So I might make sure I'm in my final project directory. I'll do Flask run. And I should see everything went well. Oh, my API key was not, again, not set. So I'll export API key and set it equal to a random string. I'll again run Flask run. And I should see that pretty much everything is working, but now it's working on my own local computer, right? I'm not connected to code spaces. I have full control over this environment here. And I've actually got my application to run, which is pretty cool. So if I go here and click on my server link here, right here is my application running on my own local computer. And we can sort of verify that by saying, hey, look, this is our own local address. If you aren't familiar with this, 127.0.1 is the address for your own local computer. Now, there's really no end to the kinds of packages you could install on your computer. And I hope by highlighting this apt-get function as well as pip, you can go ahead and install most things you might want to use in your final projects or in your other development efforts. Just one other thing I'll highlight here is installing SQLite, pretty important for this application that relies on a database. So I can go here, sudo apt-get install SQLite3, following that same structure as before, having this sudo command, apt-get install, and this package I want to go ahead and install. And if you find other packages on the internet, they might have their own ways of installing themselves that they'll tell you how to do. But again, apt-get and pip should be pretty comprehensive for a lot of the packages you might want to be installing here. A question that we've seen here is, why didn't we install tempfile and workzug as well? So that's a great question. And it's actually because Flask includes tempfile and workzug. So I only know that because Flask themselves told me on their own website and their documentation, they say, when you pip three install Flask, you also get tempfile and workzug. That won't always be the case, but often packages are pretty transparent about what other things they have to install to get themselves to work as well. Sometimes it'll happen that a package you install also needs to install other packages, and they'll sort of tell you that as you download them. Any other questions on sort of downloading these packages for your final projects? Is there a web page knowing the correct name of a package? And that's actually a wonderful question. As Rongxin noted in the chat, So pip is basically this package management system, but it relies on the Python package index. So I can go to the Python package index or PyP or PyPI, PyPy, a lot of ways to say it. And I can go ahead and search for Python packages here. I could go ahead and search for Flask. And I might see, hey, this is the latest entry that Flask has for themselves. And here is the way that I might install Flask, pip install Flask. I could also search for the CS50 library here and see if it's listed. So here I have, that doesn't look like it. That's it. Here's the CS50 library for Python, pip install CS50. So again, this is like a directory of packages you can install and use in Python using pip. And as Rongxin notes, pip stands for pip installs packages, which is sort of a recursive definition of pip, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I just want to chime in there because when pip install a package, it will also try to recursively find another dependency for that package and install it. So due to the recursive nature, that's why the name come from. Like pip install stands for pip install Python package.
Nice. And a good question here. Why did I use pip3 and not pip? Pip has different versions. So as you might know, there's like Python 2 and Python 3. I'm using pip 3 just to sort of coerce or make sure I'm using this latest version of pip. I could certainly use something like pip 2 or just say pip. But if I just say pip, unless I've explicitly configured pip to mean pip 3, I might not necessarily be using the latest version of pip. And so you can certainly use pip 3 there might be pip 2, I'm not sure, but I recommend using pip 3 to install packages here. And just as a taste of Git, what you can do with Git here, you might have noticed in Visual Studio Code, I've sort of kept track of some changes to my files. So all of these green dots here are new files that I've created by running my application. And if I were, for example, to go to my templates folder, go to my index page, and maybe just include this comment here, comment. Wait. Let me do a different kind of comment, sorry. Let me go to app.py and leave a comment here saying I'm importing packages. I'll save that. And now I should be able to see app.py has this little M message by it, meaning that it's been modified or changed. And now I can go ahead and go to my source control, which is installed in every version of VS Code. And because I've gotten this folder from Git, I can go ahead and choose which changes I want to commit or to sort of push back to my Git repository. I can highlight them all, click add here or stage them. Now they're staged and I can choose, okay, I want to go ahead and commit these. So I'll hit check here. I'll give a message saying I'm updating with comments. And as you install this for the first time, you will run into this error of making sure you assign a username and user email in Git. I'll go ahead and actually cancel this and make sure that I do something like this, git config global user.name is Carter Zenke, and git config global user.name is Carter, user.email is Carter at csfg.harvard.edu. And what that's done for me is sort of confirm to Git, hey, here's my username, here's my email. I want to go ahead and send these updates to my repository here. I'll go ahead and say update with comments, hit enter. And now those have been committed to my own local copy, but now I want to push them, sort of send them back up to where my code is stored. I'll sync changes, hit okay. And now I have my own way of sort of keeping track of all the changes that I've made. And of course, it's not always as simple as that. You might run into some challenges here, but again, making sure your branches are up to date and everything like that will be good. And that's when you can look at the GitHub documentation as well. So this was sort of the walkthrough of how to use Windows Substitute for Linux, how to install packages. Certainly happy to stay, answer questions, but I think we'll probably end officially here. Thank you all for coming. It was really nice to see you all faces, and certainly happy to answer any questions for the rest of our time together. Thank you all.